we've been talking about this, Brother Michael, Vince Gill and his daughters for the national anthem.
For the land of the free.
Oh, Corinna, 16 years old.
Wow.
And the home of
the Well, let me tell you something. My bulldog died. This is going to sound terribly crass, and I don't mean it to. My bulldog died, and I did a tribute to him on the air, to which somebody sent it to one of the finest bulldog breeders in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they were so touched by it. By the way, they were a gay couple. But they were so touched by it. They said, and this was a Westminster champion male, bred with a Westminster finalist female.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, I want to give you one of our puppies.
Wow.
We're going to give you the second pick of the litter. We get the first. And it's a really funny story because I picked Buffalo is what the name was of the puppy. And it turned out to be Vinny. And I just loved him. You know, and I had the second pick. They made their first pick and he was still there. And I said, oh, I'm taking Buffalo. Well, as it turned out, you know, and I stayed in touch with these people. You know, I'm sending them pictures. And I get a call from them. And they're like, the one they picked didn't work out very good. And I kept, you know, at first they thought, we're so happy for him. It's so cute how he loves Vinny. Because I'm telling them, I'm like, guys, I got to tell you something. This dog's perfect. I'm not an expert like you, but I'm telling you, you need to see this dog. This is the most physically perfect dog I've ever seen in my life. And, you know, and so they're like, oh, isn't that cute? Isn't that cute? So I send them some pictures.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, wow, could you do us a favor and take a video? And we did. And then they were like, you know, they realized they made a mistake.
Yeah.
That this is the champion. And they were like, would you, now you got to understand with bulldogs, you know, if they live 8 years, you're lucky. You know, and they wanted to take them back for like 2 years. Mm. We'll train them, we'll show them, and then you'll have them back. I'm like, are you kidding me? This is my son. You can't, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Vinny ended up in a freak accident, a bloat, died at 1.5 years old.
Mm.
But it was great breeding. It was bound to happen, right? I mean, you have Vince Gill and Amy Grant breed. You know, you're going to get that note at the end of the national anthem.
Yeah.
But, you know, Corinna, of course, is actually Vince and Amy's daughter, as opposed to the other children that have different fathers and mothers. But I got to tell you, I was just blown away because I haven't seen a picture of her in forever. And it was like going back in time. I thought I was 15 years old again. And here's Amy Grant on the bleachers in that one album wearing the Hawaiian shirt.
Mm-hmm.
She looks just like her mother. Acts just like her mother. And I don't know, based on that last note, but I'll tell you the most precious moment, the two most precious things about it, where there is no greater celebrity fan of the Predators with credibility than Vince Gill, period, hands down, and that he would make that about a father-daughter experience rather than him as a celebrity. And then to see Corinna growing up to be literally look just like Amy. I mean, I know she's fearfully, wonderfully made by God, and he has his own plans for her and his own everything for her. I don't mean to diminish that. But, you know, nobody could see them walk out and not see that, oh, my gosh, she doesn't resemble Amy. It's like going back in time. And then that great moment hitting the note. And then Snedzy. I will say this because I got to get to the congressman. Don't forget, still waiting in the wings, because things are building with the towel waiver, too.
Yeah.
You know, we'll go from the mayor to DeMarco Murray, to Snedzy, Brant Snedeker. Don't forget, Peyton Manning's still out there somewhere.
Oh, that's right.
You know what I mean? Where is this all going? What a great streak. What a great delight. The best news is we're up 3-1 heading to
yes.
St. Louis, and I think we can match them physically. I actually think we're going to close it out. But to have this added excitement of who's going to sing the national anthem, it's always kept a secret. Who's going to wave the towel? It's been a fun ride. And how far could this go? This club can win the Stanley Cup. They absolutely can.
Man.
And nobody has a better record than us right now in the playoffs. We are 7-1. No one else is. Can we close out this series? Yes. Can we beat Edmonton? Yes. Could we go on to beat Pittsburgh and hoist the cup? Of course we can. The question is, will we, and who will sing each national anthem and wave a towel along the way? What a fun time to live in Nashville.
Information fueled, opinion driven. This is the Michael DelGiorno Show, Super Talk 99.7.
WTN! By the way, bragging about the Predators up 3-1 with the Blues and a win away from a Western Conference final. How about the Sounds They've won 5 in a row, 4 against New Orleans, and 1 last night, 11-0 against Round Rock.
Awesome.
Game 2 tonight at 7:05. And don't forget, on the hockey front, 2 great games back-to-back. Caps and Pittsburgh. Your defending champion, Pittsburgh Penguins, still lead 2-1. This is a very important game 4 for Trotsky and the Caps, 6:30. And then the Ducks and Oilers, likely Edmonton, our next opponent. But don't count on Anaheim. They've got it down to 2-1, and they are more than capable of winning again on the road. In terms of news, there's nothing bigger than this budget fight. And really, you know, it's one of those things where it's not just the budget we're discussing now. You know, first of all, where's the wall? Well, I guess that's gone. Second of all, where's the repeal and replacement for Obamacare? Because the first time didn't work, and the second time's not looking much better. And now here's a budget. I really can't cut to the chase better than what I said. If you had gone into a coma on November 3rd and you just woke up and I showed you this budget we're thinking about passing, you'd have bet your life Hillary won. It's indistinguishable. How did we get here? Where do we go from here? Who is failing us? My favorite congressman and the only one I really trust in our delegation, Scott Desjarlais, is on the live line with us. Scott, really hard to spin this a win for both sides, or it looks what it is. Politics as usual, lack of courage as usual, and a lot of campaign promises not being delivered.
Yeah, I think I'd rather talk about hockey this morning.
I knew you would, but we can't.
No, it was a huge punt on the part of the Republicans, and that's really disappointing. Of course, I can't support it, won't be voting for it.
What about the rest of our delegation? It's probably not an unfair question, but you must know. I don't. I haven't had a chance to research it.
You know, I really don't know. I just predict that this is going to pass with more Democrat votes than Republicans, and that pretty much tells you everything you need to know.
Conservative groups like the Heritage Action, Heritage Foundation, me, you, Rush Limbaugh, virtually anybody who looked at all of these people running for the United States Senate as candidates, running for the House of Representatives as candidates, certainly Donald Trump running for president, saying he's going to clean the swamp, saying he's going to defund Planned Parenthood, saying he's going to defund sanctuary cities, saying he's going to cut spending and duplication and overspending, prioritize national security, build that wall, and defund Planned Parenthood. It's all not there. I mean, you know, there's just, you know, and then they like resent them for spiking the ball and having an end zone celebration. Well, why wouldn't they? I mean, this is completely a victory for the Democrats. No question about it.
Right. Now, yeah, I think we've been so wrapped up in health care that we just saw our party taking a tougher stand when it came to this fight. I actually came up here last week. I told Amy, I said, this is going to be a good week. We're going to get a decent budget passed for 5 months, and we're going to pass the health care law. And I went home, and all we had was a five-week CR to apparently get more time to let the Democrats write this bill. You know, we couldn't do it in December because we thought we'd have Trump in the White House and that we could really get the ball rolling on draining the swamp. And, you know, so, you know, of course, I voted against a five-day CR just out of disgust. And I thought, well, maybe we can make this better. But
no, it got worse.
The week went on. Yeah, behind closed doors, leadership crafted this gem.
And what are you hearing from them? The same thing that we're hearing through the media that, well, the votes weren't there in the Senate. Well, that's a problem. And maybe we need to address who's in the Senate. But then to have Trump tweet that, oh, I'll tell you what our country needs. I have always said this. This notion that a shutdown would be an awful thing. Let me tell you something. A government shutdown would be probably, in my opinion, the only way to get spending under control and prioritized. And then Trump has the nerve to tweet, well, our country needs a good shutdown. Maybe we'll give it to it in September and then really fix this. Look, then why not do it now? Why not change it to just a straight majority now or risk the shutdown now? When you appease an aggressor, you embolden them. It's going to be twice as hard, and they're going to make it twice as painful in the media if you do it then.
Yeah, and 6 years of experience here tells me that. Trump hasn't been here long enough to figure that out. He's really only been in office 3 months. But if he thinks this is going to be any easier in September, he's got another thing coming. And I think Trump's pathway to success in navigating Congress runs through the House Freedom Caucus, not the Republican establishment.
Well, he's 0-3, realizing that. I mean, let's face it. He was here in Nashville, and he astutely said, should have never listened to my advisors and my attorneys. Should have done the travel ban the way I wanted to. Maybe I'll go back to the first travel ban and go all the way to the Supreme Court. And I thought, okay, he's waking up. that he is, you know, he needs to wake up and realize, no, you are the most focused. You are the most in touch with the people, and you are the smartest guy in the room. And you were betrayed by your advisors, betrayed by your attorneys on the travel ban. Then you were betrayed by Paul Ryan on the Obamacare fix. It wasn't even a repeal. You got to really repeal something and kill it if you're going to fix it. And now with this budget, it looks like, hey, I'm sorry. At some point, you know, three strikes, you're out if he's not waking up to this.
Well, I still have hope that he's going to. I know that it's difficult to understand the dysfunction of this place. But if health care passes tomorrow, it's because of the leadership from the House Freedom Caucus. When our leadership declared it dead a month ago, threw their hands up in disgust and walked away, you know, we continue to forge on, make it a better bill, help the president to fulfill his promise in bringing down premiums, and we're on the cusp of doing that. That may happen tomorrow. And I think the president's going to sit back and realize, and Mike Pence is going to tell him, and Mick Mulvaney's going to tell him, that it was the Freedom Caucus that got this across the finish line. And if we do that, and then we move into tax reform and we start seeing some success there, then, you know, I think there's still a chance to turn this around.
That gets to my analogy of, does appeasement embolden an aggressor? It certainly does in war. It certainly does with enemies. It certainly does with military and foreign policy. So, I mean, I think that's kind of what no one is saying, but trying to softly sell. Hey, don't sweat this budget till September. This was so we could get on to repeal and replace, you know, and get on to these other issues. And I'm like, that's a lot of trust. I think they're going to take this as momentum and victory. They have found a way to
using this as an excuse that we didn't want the distraction of a government shutdown fight right now would be more palatable had we just passed Obamacare and we were well into tax reform. Then maybe you could have made that argument. But I think you and I know that this fight just gets tougher and it's going to be uglier. But we've got to have the fight now. And I hate that Trump did say that, you know, what we need is a good government shutdown, because they're going to, you know, hold him to that. But the bottom line is he needs to build the wall. He needs to fulfill the promises, and he's going to have to take the leadership role. And we're going to have to realize that there are a lot of Republicans in the conference that really didn't want to repeal Obamacare. And, you know, Trump's going to have to take the bull by the horns there. And I think guys were talking about it earlier.
Yeah, let me get the answer to that. Is that kind of the wind that is in the air? That we gave him this budget through September, but it's about the tax cuts, because that's what's really going to turn the economy around. That's what's really going to fund government properly. And it's about repealing and replacing Obamacare. Trust me, we got two giant victories coming. This little temporary budget victory for them is, because I think nobody's coming out and saying it. And that's why when we talk about Mulvaney, or we talk about even, and it was a disastrous interview with Rush Limbaugh yesterday, the vice president, it's indefensible, this budget. So, and I think this notion that, oh, we're going to fight next time, you're 0-for-3 fighting.
Yeah, the old term of kicking the can down the road is what we lived with Boehner for years, and everyone was sick of that term, as I was, but yet, you know, here we've done it again, and we're going to have this fight. So if the government shuts down in September, you and I both know the government doesn't really shut down. Even in a shutdown, we're still going into debt at an enormous rate because so much of the spending is on autopilot. But if that's what it takes to get the attention and take control back over from the Democrats who basically just rolled us, you know, that's what we're going to have to do.
He lives with a sea of politicians. He's an actual statesman. My favorite Congressman, Scott Desjarlais. Closing moments. You know, I know we don't know how the rest of the delegation is going to vote. And, you know, we've certainly given Trump all the accountability he deserves on this. I get email after email that sounds something like this, Scott. Who are these Republicans failing us? What are their names? Where do we really, you know, prioritize the problem? I think, and I could give names, it would get boring, but I think we have an establishment of the Republican Party that would probably like Trump to fail as much as the far left on the Democrat side. And I've seen him do it on the travel ban. I've seen him do it on the repeal and replace of Obamacare. And I'm certainly seeing them do that in this budget. Do we need a new speaker? I say yes. Do we need to identify these establishment, or what now the media is calling moderate Republicans? They got to be moderate and sensible, because people like you are crazy and people like me are nuts. But I mean, how would you answer an emailer that says, who are these people and what are their names? Because let me tell you something. It is a giant leap to expect the American voters in a year and a half from now to not really throw up their hands in disgust. First, they got duped by Obama and the left. Then they got duped by Republicans who said, give me control of the House, and then the Senate will stop them, and they didn't. Then they got duped by give us Trump, an outsider, and a Republican control of the Senate and the House, and they get duped again. I fear ultimate apathy, which will hand it to the socialist left at that point. But who are these people, and can identifying them help?
Well, I think it will. I mean, we got to look at what Trump promised the people and what they elected him to do, and that's the agenda that we have to be successful on implementing. And honestly, a lot of Democrats fell on the sword for Barack Obama after he got elected, and we're going to take some casualties if we do things right here, but we're going to take a lot more casualties if we get into that apathetic state that you speak of. So, we're just going to have to look at why we ran for office, what we promised our constituency, what the people expect from a Trump administration. We got to get behind and make those things happen, or a lot of people need to go home.
All right, give us hope to beyond who may need to go home and how this might play out. What are the chances of getting the kind of meaningful, and I'm talking Kennedy first, John F. Kennedy explained, morally, when you go to work, it's your money, not the government's, and decide how much you get to keep. So across the board, top to bottom, immediate and forever, corporate, family, small business, and individual tax cuts, meaningful ones. How likely is that? Because I'm not feeling as confident after this caved budget bill.
I'm hoping that, again, the learning curve has been steep for Trump, but I hope he sees if we can get health care passed, I hope he sees that things can be done, we can accomplish these things. And I'm hopeful every day I get up and go to work now. I'm just so thankful that we have Donald Trump in the White House and not Hillary Clinton, but we can't squander this opportunity. And so I go to work every day now with optimism we're going to make those things happen because it's our only hope. And so with your help and pressure on the people that need to come around, we're going to fight this thing to the end.
And with what's near and dear to your heart, let's remember I'm talking to a doctor. A man who is of the medical profession and has seen it seized and control of it taken over and it completely sent into chaos and vulnerability. How real are, we have only 60 seconds, but how real are the nuts and bolts of actually repealing it in take two and actually replacing it and returning things, even if it's to the states, where the people can vote with their feet and governors can lead?
Well, that's what this bill does, is it allows a lot of this control to come back to the states. So, I mean, we've got to get it off the launch pad and over to the Senate. I have great fears there, but we need to keep the pressure on the people in the Senate. I'll be working with our senators and others. I'm optimistic that we're going to get this done because we have to get it done. There really is no other option but success on these issues, and so we're going to find a way to get it done.
Congressman Scott Desjarlais joining us. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. I will find out. I mean, when they vote, we'll know. But, if I had to guess, I mean, I can give you a list of senators and a list of members of the House of Representatives, and it might be 40, 50 long on the House side that are moderates and or Democrats with an R by their name. And they need to go. But, we start at home, and we focus at home. So I can tell you, as a citizen of the United States, as a resident of the state of Tennessee, I'm going to be watching Dianne Black, and I'm going to be watching Marsha Blackburn on this vote. And I don't have to watch Scott Desjarlais, ever. And he just told you, it doesn't have his support, and it's not going to have his support. So, all we can do is where we're at and the sound of our voice. So we'll be watching our delegation. Because I'm telling you, if you were in a coma and you just woke up, this budget through September looks like Hillary won, not Trump. Looks like the Democrat either Hillary won and the Republicans couldn't get a real meaningful budget through because she'd just veto it. Or it looks like even the Democrats are in control of the House or Senate to boot. This is a disgrace. And the failures are starting to catch up. Money's still going to flow to Planned Parenthood. Sanctuary cities will not be defunded. A wall will not be built. I mean, and increases in entitlement spending. This does not look like a Republican president, a Republican-controlled Senate and House put together a bill for spending between now and September. Add that to the first failure of repeal and replace. Add that to the failure of the travel ban. These failures are starting to mount.
I kind of like this. I hate to stop the show and comment, but that just kind of sounds fun.
What's that?
Does it give the name?
1985 apparently is the name of the song.
Bowling for Soup.
Not the group. Not the greatest year of my life, 85, I can tell you that. Although I had one of my finest softball seasons.
That was a good year for me.
Was it a good year?
Oh, yeah.
What happened in 85?
Well, I was a junior in high school, and I was a cat's meow, let me tell you.
You know, I want that one day. Bring me a picture of you in high school.
Make you guys feel old.
You don't want to see that, dude. I had a mullet.
I was in kindergarten.
I got to tell you something. I if you go to the Little League field, yeah, that's disgusting,
you
Chris.
Youngster.
I caught it.
Good grief.
I'm giving you the hand signal from Mike One Main Studio.
What's going on?
No, but if you went to my son's Little League game, let's say it's before the game, and you'd look at him and you go, oh, my God, that's a future major leaguer. Now, once the game starts and you watch him, you'll go, this kid's got no talent. He looks like a ball player. I mean, his pants, his shoes, his jersey, his hat, his glove.
He's a Del Giorno.
Oh, yeah, he looks it. Because that's the one thing my brother used to stress to me. Hey, Moke, maybe you won't be as good as me, but there's no excuse for not looking like a ball player.
That's right.
I looked like one and played like one. But, and that's how I was. Like, in football, I sucked. I was terrible. I mean, I don't make my past greater than it was. I shoot straight with everybody. I had a terrible 20s, let me tell you. I made a lot of mistakes in my 20s. I don't glorify anything. I was talking to my nephew last night. I said, he goes, well, we're not going to have kids. I said, don't ever say that, Michael. First of all, you are going to be the greatest father. And let me tell you something. There is nothing, and everything else in life is overrated compared to marrying right and having children. It's just the greatest. You rob yourself from that, you're a fool. You'll know God so much better. You'll love your wife so much more. You'll have so much more joy. It's all that matters. Nobody on their deathbed goes, I want to do one more show. You know? But so I don't glorify things. I was great in baseball. I can look you in the eye, and I'm not being cocky. I was great.
You look cocky.
In football, I sucked. Now, I loved the game. I was having fun, but I wasn't good. Hey, I didn't have a chance. My freshman year, I remember I was sitting with a coach. I said, well, we can't put 4'11". He's like, Mo, what do you want me to put? I said, put 5 foot at least. Get me into the fives. And so then we weighed me, and I was like, 101. I said, we can't put 101. What do you want me to put in there? You need to beef up on the pole boys. I said, put a 110. So the program said 5 foot, 110. But I wasn't. I was really 4'11", and I was 90. And I played nose tackle. So, I mean, I could do everything. I could pretend I was, I remember being on a high school football field and being in my three-point stance going, na, 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 na. I'd be doing the NFL songs in my head. But everybody that hit me, I went backwards. I'll never forget this one guy. This center was so fat. The skin was coming outside the face mask. And I went into it, and boom, I went down. He's laying on me. Now I got this fat, smelly, pimply guy who can't even fit his face mask on top of him. This is gay. Get off of me. But I was terrible. But I had a picture. And somebody took it of me on the sidelines. And I got to tell you, if you just went by that picture, you go, this guy's an animal. Remember how when you used to see, what was his first name? Lambert, the linebacker for Pittsburgh.
Jack Lambert.
Jack Lambert, out of everybody who ever played you watch the old films of Huff and, Buckus, but even Buckus, nothing was like
Jack Lambert.
Didn't even have his teeth.
No teeth.
I mean, this guy looked like he was like, angry at life.
Yeah, nothing to lose.
He's growling.
I would have soiled myself if he came at me. Literally. I think my bowels would have released.
Yes.
And that's kind of how I looked. I mean, you can't tell because I'm not near anybody else. So you can't, there's no dimension. Like if you put an average freshman next to me, you'd be like, who let this fifth grader on the field? But it was me all alone. You could see my
had a low camera angle, so you
looked
bigger.
Oh, man, my pads looked perfect. The dirt in all the right places. My pads, I had arm pads. Yeah. I mean, I looked bad. Had my little shamrocks on my helmet. I don't know how the hell I earned those showing up.
Getting hit.
But I cannot find that picture because I would love to post it on Facebook. You would all look at that, and it's like my son in Little League. You go, oh, man, look out for him. This guy, this is a football player.
That dude's
and
trouble.
I sucked. But I had the look. Yeah, that's the key.
It's all about the look, dude.
If I get asked any one question the most by management, it's why do you answer emails? Why do you bother? And this sounds terrible, doesn't it? Why do you bother to talk to listeners? And
And my notion and my answer is this. You ready?
Yeah.
Because my three, well, I'll make that four now, best friends are Nate Dogg, a listener, Scott Cosimore, a listener, Pete Cristiano, a listener, Jen Crawford, a listener. Now, there are many others. I can't leave out Margaret Colucci. All these people began as listeners. They're like family now. Are you kidding me? When I celebrated my 10th anniversary, what I said behind your back to God was, I don't care what radio station I work for. I don't care what city I live in. Thank you for your life. Thank you for your calling and everybody you've brought in to carry out this mission together and to encourage and support and pray for me. Do you know what I'm in love with most in these 10 years? My audience. Now, I could go down the list, and if I start doing it, I'll leave people out. But why do I talk to listeners? Because I think of a homeless man who was homeless for 2.5 years, and we communicated almost nightly on Facebook. And it seemed like an impossible task to keep him focused. How do I tell him about a God of abundancy, eternity and abundant life, when he's living in a car? But I did. And he lives with his daughter in a different city and has an amazing job today. Do you know what he did while he was homeless? He wrote books and finished his college education. Do I say that to impress you? No, I'm telling you, that journey impressed me. I can't tell you things I talked about. I can't tell you things we did. I was struggling to play old cartoons and remember some just to give it a 10-year anniversary feel. Because you know what? The greatest moments of my life in 10 years is that homeless man. There was another one that I went through a very similar experience with, and he committed suicide. Oh, there have been victories. There have been defeats. Today is Jen Crawford's birthday. Now, when I talk about Scott Cosimore or Pete Cristiano or even Jen, I look back and I say it this way. It's not a radio story. That's God giving my children aunts and uncles that they don't have. It's exactly what it is. Nick does not miss the experience of no uncles in his life because, frankly, he has three. Two that are my brother, one that is Andrew's brother, and they're awful. They're awful. But they don't know it because they have Ralph Bristol. They don't know it because they have Pete Cristiano. They don't know it because they have Scott Cosimore. And they don't have any aunts in their lives because my brother's wives are as MIA as my brother's. And Andrew didn't have any sisters, but they don't lack aunts because of Jen. It's her birthday today. To say happy birthday is to say, oh, thank God you were born. Oh, thank God he brought you into my life. And as a father, thank you. We joke with her. It really should be a Saturday Night Live skit. Jen has dedicated her entire life to working with children. She's a nanny. She hates kids. So I always sing this song. She's the nanny that hates kids. Because it really should be an ongoing Saturday Night Live bit. Who would choose to be a nanny when you hate kids? And I keep trying to encourage her. You're going to find a husband. You're going to get married. And your kids are going to be different. Because that's the lie we all have to believe to procreate, right? I mean, we have met everybody's kids. We went to school with all of everybody else's kids. They're all jerks. But yours will be different.
Oh, yes.
That's what makes the chicka chicka bow bow music begin. Because basically what we're doing is recreating us. And while we don't realize it, we're jerks. See, that's the one thing nobody ever looks you in the eye and says. You can put up a front. People can look up to you. You can have your good points. Let's face it, we're all jerks. It's like I said, it's the most unexclusive club in the history of eternity. All have fallen short. All have sinned. We're all a bunch of jerks and frauds at some level. I look at my kids and my wife's like, we have the worst kids in the world. I said, they act like us. Why would you should have? Let me tell you something. One of the greatest moments. Dan Mandis comes over to the house. You know, I grew up. Fred Winston came over. Robert W. Morgan came over. My kids. Dan Mandis comes over. They start ripping him. First of all, the girls start bringing him all kinds of rodents. And, you know, Dan is like a space freak. You can't breach his space. My girls are in his face. The rat's butt's in his face. And he's like cringing. He backed up so far he hit a wall. And then he was like, I thought he was going to put his head through the drywall to get some space. My kids are all over him. And then he's like, well, I really kind of got to get going. I got, you know, this.
Yeah.
And Nick starts ripping him. I'm probably not allowed to say what Nick was ripping him about because it's of something that Dan's going through personally. But, I mean, Nick nailed him. Let me turn my mic off. And, you know, Dan was like, oh, yeah, I did. Chris got to hear the story. I can't share it with everybody.
Great.
But yeah, I'm looking at him. I'm like, these kids are obnoxious. They don't shut up. They're inappropriate, you know. And then I'm like, they're me. I made me's little jerks. But I say all that, and the point being, I moved to a strange city where I knew no one, and I had a wife, and I had three small children, and out of the blue, Jen Crawford Facebooks me and says, the Lord put it on my heart. I want to bless you guys. I want you to know I'm a nanny. I'm certified. I want to come watch your kids so you and your wife can go out for dinner. Thank God for that. Thank God I read it. Thank God I responded. Thank God we met. Those are my kids' aunt. That's my kid's aunt right now. That's Andrea's most trusted advisor, one of my favorite friends. We do movie nights. That's why I talk to listeners. And let me add one last point that I wanted to make in this little personal segment. This is the difference between radio and television. This is the greatness of radio. And not just the greatness of WTN, but radio in general. We're all real. Where would I be without my listeners? I wouldn't have Pete and Scott. Where would I be without this job? I wouldn't have Ralph. I wouldn't have Ken. I wouldn't have Dan. I wouldn't have Chris. Oh, life's great. And for all the things that distract you or for all the things that may not be right that you're focused on, oh, don't miss everything that God has orchestrated extraordinarily right. So all that to say, Jen, obviously, happy birthday. I am so glad you were born. None of us can imagine our life without you in it. And it is still probably one of the most extraordinary stories I've ever heard. A nanny who hates kids. Who else's birthday is it today? Anybody famous on Jen's birthday? Frankie Valli!
Well, I'll be. How old is Frankie?
Take a guess. It's worse than you think.
82?
Well, maybe it's not worse than you think. Wow. Can you get my
eyes? He's not that old?
Can you get my eyes adore you?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Carolyn Kempsel, who, by the way, was it you and me or me and Dan? Or Chris? No, it was you. It was Weber. You found Carolyn Kempsel online on Facebook, remember?
Yes.
Tell him how smoking hot she still is.
She still is, yeah.
I mean,
I messaged her. She didn't.
Oh, she probably wants nothing to do with it.
Nope.
Well, because I knew by looking at her Facebook, she's a very staunch liberal. It would have never worked. But when you're 12 years old playing basketball in the front yard, oh, was she gorgeous. Gorgeous. And she used to wear little white painter pants. She feathered her hair like Farrah Fawcett, but looked like Olivia Newton-John. Oh, Carolyn Kempsel. Frankie Valli is 83 years old today.
Yeah, I was close.
Lead singer of the Four Seasons. Boy, everybody in that band ruined his life, didn't they? Did you find My Eyes Adore You? I used to play this on my jukebox and think of Carolyn Kempsel. How long does it take to get it to queue up? Crank it up. Comfort. Comfort. Frankie Valli, 83, with the theme song of 1977. My Love Affair with Carolyn Kempsel. Oh, I never did lay a hand on her.
Oh, I never laid a hand on you. My eyes adored you. Like a million miles away from me.
And I think Frankie's still singing at 83.
Probably is.
Oh, let me tell you something. 83. First of all, 83, I'm dead. 83, I am deep in decomposition.
I hope I am.
But if I'm not.
I read your books from school. I played make-believe you're married to me.
Actually, you were 13 and I was 2. You were a liberal, I was a conservative, but who knew?
Even then.
I rhymed on that. You talked over it, Ken.
Sorry.
We grew into a me and you. Then we went our separate ways.
Carolyn Kempson. I didn't know you were adopted till I stalked you online, Kempso. Now you're a liberal teacher teaching Common Core, all the people I fight. You can't stomach me, won't return my producer's Facebook message. But you're still hot, City Lights. Well, I never did get the fortune and fame. I filled in for Michael Savage. Are you impressed yet? Worked my fingers to the bone. By the way, I got off the air yesterday and I completely cleaned my house, vacuum dusted. I am a mighty man.
You did it?
Yeah, my wife's feeling a little under the weather. So am I, but it doesn't matter.
But I committed it away.
What was the old commercial? I have to bring home the bacon and fry it up in a pan and then never, never let you forget I'm a man because I'm a woman. Anjali, wasn't it?
I don't know. Man.
You know, I have all this terrible music in my head and even terrible old jingles in my head, along with about 57 erectile dysfunction commercials.
Oh, yes.
Two of them coming up for you next on WTN. Hey, by the way, happy birthday, Jen. That was the whole point of this segment. And thank you, Scott and Dog and David Zanad. I mean, all my best friends all started as listeners. Praise God. What a great job. Oh my gosh, I just said that, didn't I? I've been fighting with God for 3 decades over being in radio, and I just thanked him.
Fight's over.
And he won again.